Okay. We ready to go, Reg? Let's do this thing. All set. Got the meters bopping there. Those needles are bumping, bopping around in a good spot. I'm liking that. All right, let's go. You ready? What? What did you make? You're making weird. Oh, yes. No, that's fine. All right. So, we ready? I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music. I'll give you a podcast. You ready to go? All right. You're done with all your gesturing? Okay. All right. Thank God. Thank God this isn't a visual medium. All right. Here we go. And put it in the books. Episode 254. Ready? Here we go. Three S's. Star, smile, strong. Now we can go. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. Or we are found wherever you go to find your favorite podcasts. We are there. And don't forget, listening to this podcast is not your only responsibility. It's also your job, your obligation, once you become a regular listener, to spread the word. So send a link, send a message. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, anybody who listens to podcasts, tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion, and of course, that extra, extra, extra little effort is much appreciated. Also, don't forget, if you like what you're hearing, whether you're a longtime listener or you're new to the podcast, go to WGNradio.com. There's a prompt for podcasts, which I'm sure you have used to get to this, perhaps. And if you click on the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, you will find all previous episodes of this podcast. How about that? It's quite a vault. It's quite full. In fact, there's 253 episodes in there just waiting for you to binge on. We have been certified by the Podcast Association of America as binge-worthy. So if there's 253 back there, this can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 254. So today I've got to relate this story. I often share a big part of this podcast, in fact, is sharing some of the interesting little oddities that happen in my life. And sometimes you may wonder, wow, is all this really happening? Yes, I'm not making any of this up. And if anything, I'm maybe downplaying some of the stuff that's going on. And I'm not, I'm editing. I'm not telling you everything. But this one I have to share because it really is interesting on a variety, I think, of fronts, and maybe would even be helpful to you in your own life. Maybe you can take away something, not only be entertained, hopefully, by it, but also maybe, learn a lesson from it. I'm trying to. So, recently I had a very small health issue, nothing majorly serious, but it certainly needed to be taken care of, and it needed to be tested. And so, there was nothing in me that was worried about this test. I felt like, okay, the test was more out of just to confirm that everything was fine rather than to find something was wrong. So that was kind of the mindset I had going in my mind. But still, it's a test. It's a medical test, right? And a lot of reasons that people don't go to doctors is because they don't want to find out that something's wrong with them. And of course, that is the absolutely wrong thing to do. The longer you wait, the longer you deny it, the longer you overlook it, the longer you neglect it, most likely a problem will get worse. And then when you finally have to confront it, sadly, a lot of times it could be very serious and even life-threatening. Who knows, depending on the situation. I have been lucky in my life in that I have been pretty healthy throughout my life. I should say that up until a point. For the first 50 years of my life, I was in fairly good health. I was rarely sick. I rarely got colds. I didn't have anything serious. I didn't have any major surgeries. I did have a broken nose, but that happened when I was 16. I did have to have surgery because to my own point here, and that's why I learned a lesson. I didn't know I had a broken nose. I had gotten hit, but I didn't really think that it was was broken or anything. And I went for about a week or so without it. And I was having trouble breathing. And then finally my parents were hearing me and they're going, you know, you're sleeping and, you know, you're not breathing or, you know, you've got to go to a doctor. And so then they took an x-ray and they said, yeah, his nose is broken. And that was actually turned out to be a more complicated kind of experience than it should have been. The surgery went fine. They had to re-break my nose because it had already begun to heal. And so they had to re-break my nose. And if you've ever seen that, obviously I wasn't awake, but the surgery went fine. But then I caught an infection while I was in the hospital. And that was, you know, I was pretty bad for about 2 or 3, 4 days. It was, you know, I got this fever and this infection. So now the nose was fine, but I had to fight this infection that I got. And to be honest with you, I don't even really know how serious it was. I know my parents seemed to be very worried as things were going on. I was only 16. I really didn't, maybe I didn't even understand the seriousness of it. But thankfully, everything went fine. The fever broke and the infection was gone. And although I have to say, one of my memories of that experience was I had this broken nose, and so they had to pack it with gauze, you know, to make sure everything was fine, and, you know, I guess that's the only way they can, you know, kind of set it without, you know, any kind of a cast, right? I guess, I'm assuming. So they had to pack it with gauze. Both nostrils were just packed. And it's amazing how much your nostrils can stretch. You don't really know how much your nostrils can stretch until they are stretched. And, you know, you may stretch them to some extent every so often, but then you feel some resistance. You say, oh, that's as far. No, your nostrils are like rubber bands. Believe me. Because I've experienced it and seen it. And the one memory I have of this broken nose surgery was when I was 16, was they said, okay, we're going to take the bandages out. We're going to take the gauze out. So I figure, well, what's the big deal about that, right? It's just gauze. How could that hurt? Well, apparently to get the gauze, you know, far up into your nasal cavity, you know, they just don't push it up. You know, the nasal cavity, of course, you know, gets a little more narrow as it goes up. And so they basically have to put some kind of a gauze that is kind of spiraled, you know, it's ringed. And that is able to get in to those narrow areas because they had to go pretty high up in order to make sure there's no bleeding and everything. And then, of course, you know, anytime you have a Band-Aid, you know that, even from just a Band-Aid, you know, if you have something that had bled a lot, you know, the Band-Aid, the gauze sticks to your skin. So sometimes it can hurt when you take it off. But now, you know, so once again, remember now, this gauze is kind of spiraled up high, you know, into my nasal cavity. And if you've recently taken a COVID test and you've had that long Q-tip that they use, you know that your nasal cavity goes pretty high up there. You don't realize. I mean, think about it. You know, a lot of times, when you drink something and it, comes out your nose. I mean, it's all connected, right? There's a nice little stream there. At least there should be. So it's we have no idea what's going on inside our bodies and the length of all these veins and arteries and passages and everything. So anyway, they said we're going to take out the gauze. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Big deal, right? Well, that was one of the most painful things, and I can still remember it, that I've ever gone through. And first of all, because I wasn't expecting it to be painful. And so it took me by surprise, and it probably lasted less than a minute, probably even less than 30 seconds. But my gosh, I can still remember the pain and the experience of that. And the doctor did give me a little warning and said, okay, this may hurt a little, so just, I'm going to do this as fast as I can. So he was aware with both, the as far up as this gauze was, and then it had been in my nose now for a week or so. So clearly there, it had been, the blood had dried in there, right? So I'm assuming that he's just taking off some gauze, big deal. But no, this was a little more involved. And he knew it. And I think he tried to both prepare me as well as not scare me. And it's one of those things like, they just say, rip it quick, right? It's going to hurt, but just do it and deal with it, and the pain will go away. It's a fast pain, but it's a pain. Well, okay, consider now, if you will, this spiraled gauze. Okay, if you pull it out, right, it's going to re-spiral, right? That's how it's going to come out. If it's spiraled in, it's going to spiral out. And if you pull it quickly, it's going to spiral quickly. And if it's in a tight area like a nostril, and it may already be kind of not cemented, obviously, but certainly connected to the nose and the skin in some way, you've got a kind of a double whammy here. You've got this spiral effect of the gauze spinning out, and then you've potentially got this friction of it sticking through, being scabbed in there, or solid in there, because the blood has dried. So you got a double whammy going. And I'm trying to think if they really couldn't even lube it, because my nostrils were packed. I mean, they were packed. There was no breathing through my nose while those were in there. There was no more room. And as I said, your nostrils really can stretch when they're asked to. And so he just said, okay, here we go. And he pulled on that gauze very quickly. And oh my gosh, it was this, like I said, I can still feel it now. This spiraling effect from the upper regions of my head. I mean, I don't know how high up that gauze was, but it was past my eyebrows. That's how far up this gauze was. And now it's being recoiled out in a very quick thrusting motion. And it's along the way, it's jammed with dry blood. And oh, so what the hell is going on? So he gets done with one, and I screamed. I was just, I don't even know if there was a nurse there. She was kind of holding me down, because I think they knew this was going to hurt. And I wasn't aware of that at the beginning. But now I was, right? I went, oh. I mean, I was literally breathing. I can remember just breathing heavily, like, oh my gosh, that was painful and not pleasant in any way, shape, or form. And of course, you have to remember that we all have two nostrils. So not only now had I gone through this, it probably took 20 seconds, if that, maybe 10, maybe 5, maybe 2. It seemed like forever to get all this gauze out. I couldn't believe how much gauze was in my nose. And it's spiraling out in this, you know, in my nose in this very small canal. And oh, but now we have to do nostril number 2. Okay, now it's even worse because now I know what it feels like. You know, we already went through one. If I got through one, it's like, okay, fine, I got through it. We're done. It was painful. I didn't know what to expect, but whew, it's over with. But now it's like, okay, now we'll do the other one. Oh, not again. Now I know what I'm in. Now I'm totally, you know, before the first time I was kind of relaxed because I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. And then by the time I even realized what was happening and what and the pain and everything and the uncomfort, discomfort, it was done. Right. So at least, as I said before, now you can just go, okay. I mean, that was a lot more than I expected, but it's over with. And thank God. Well, now I know exactly what to expect and we have to do it again. And so now I'm tensed up. I'm stressed out. I'm wincing before it even happens. I'm holding on. I mean, I'm just, you know, my own anxiety and stress is probably making the situation much worse. And so he says, okay, here we go. And, oh, that one, you know, was probably no worse than the first one, but it certainly, I remember it feeling a lot worse just because of what I brought into the situation. And that's so often what we do. We do make things a lot worse. We don't even realize the power of our brain. We, you know, they always say we use, what, 3 or 4% of it? And you don't realize how at times when you, maybe when you tap into that 4.1% of it, you know, how it can affect you. It really, you know, we so often make things worse because of our own stress and anxiety and anticipation and fear of things. But wow, I just remember that. I almost think I was sweating. It was that much. I think I was that, ugh. I'll never forget that. So, but for the most part, I have been relatively healthy. No appendix, no other things, no, you know, before I was 50, I should say. I had no broken bones, no broken anything after that. I say that broken nose, but no broken arms, no broken legs, no appendix, no gallbladders. You know, I had some stitches early on in my life, very young, which I don't even remember. I was so young that I don't even remember having them. I was a little baby. And I should mention this too. So I was recently going through my baby book and that my mom took detailed notes about as an only child, obviously. She had a lot of time and a lot of motivation to document my early years. And I knew about one because I have a scar on my left hand on the outer fleshy part of my palm opposite my thumb. And I grew up noticing this kind of jagged line on my in the fleshy part of my palm. And, you know, our palms all have lines on them. But this certainly looked different. And I could see it. And it really did look jagged. It has the, you know, it has the attributes of like the Frankenstein scar on his head. You know, that scar that Herman Munster and Boris Karloff both had on the top of on their foreheads. Mine, it wasn't red like that at this time, and now I'm still looking at it, and it's still there. I could still feel it. It's white. It's you know, it's translucent at this point, But I always noticed it, and I just figured, well, everybody's got that, right? I mean, I don't remember. I just sort of growing up looking at my hand and noticed that thing until I looked at other people's hands and noticed they didn't have one there. You know, everybody's got these lines on their hands, right? We all have these lines in our hands, so I just assumed that was another line, just an odd one that was kind of out and floating there with no – that wasn't going anywhere, wasn't leading anywhere, but it was just another line. And then – I looked at other people's hands, and that fleshy part of their palm there didn't seem to have this little jagged line like I did. And so finally, I one day I asked my mom, "And what is this?" And she said, "Oh, that's when you were like 1.5 or 2 years old. You were running around. My dad had a friend who owned a gas station, and I was running. I just learned how to walk, apparently, and I ran and tripped and fell on an open can of cat food and cut my hand, and it was pretty bad, and it was bleeding pretty bad. I mean, so I got. I mean, I would say it's a good. It's an inch scar at least, and that's on my hand right now. It's probably even a little more than that. So could you imagine on a two-year-old's hand? I can only imagine what was going on there. And but I grew up never knowing I had this. So I'm sure it was a very traumatic thing. I had stitches and the whole deal, but never really knew it. And I did have that, but wasn't really in my memory. And then around... on my lip, like where your two lips meet in the corner there, I've always seen this little scar, and for many years, and I just assumed, since where it is, that I cut myself shaving one time, perhaps, because it's in an odd little spot where if you're shaving, men would know this more than women, I hope. it's right where your upper lip and your lower lip meet, in that little corner there. And that, a lot of times, it's very thin, sensitive skin right there. And it's easy to cut that if you're shaving. And I've been known to cut myself, shaving a little too quick, get a little too cocky. Yes, I still use a razor. I don't use any kind of an electric razor. I use a razor. So I just assumed when I would open my mouth or even put my tongue behind there and accentuate that area, I could see like a little scar there, a little white scar in the middle there. And I assumed that maybe somewhere down the line I had cut myself shaving, don't remember it, and, it's just a little scar that healed on its own. So I'm reading through this baby book that my mom had kept very copious notes in, especially the first 10 or 11 or 12 years of my life. Although she continued through college, I have to say, wow, good job to you, Mom, wherever you are. Thank you so much, because she kept it up. You'd think that maybe after a couple of years, after the thrill of motherhood and childbirth had left, she would have lost interest in filling out this little book of my life. But no, she stuck with it. It wasn't as detailed as it was at the beginning. So, obviously. The first, 2 or 3 or 4 years, it's like everything I did, first burp, you name it, it's on there. But I have to say, it was a very loving thing that she did, that she kept this book, and she kept adding to it as I continued to live my life and things happened to me. She recorded them, and now I look at this, and I'm grateful that she did. And so, another nice, loving gesture that she did, and something that she left me. And so, it's just nice to look at that book and see her handwriting and realize that she took the time to do that. And probably in her mind, hoping or knowing that one day, many years or many decades later, that I would read it. And so I am. So mission accomplished. Nice job, Mom. But I'm reading this book recently. I was looking for some old pictures, and so I pulled this book out, and I hadn't read it in a long time. And I don't even think I really have read it in the previous times. I don't really think I read it with a lot of close look. I just would always skim through. But I was kind of like, well, let me just read this thing, She took the time. And in there, I read that I cut my lip when I was like 2.5 or something. Not sure how I did it. The details of the accident weren't there, but it says, Jimmy cut lip. 2 stitches, 3 stitches. Who knew? I had no idea. I had no idea that this scar that I've seen was another one of these scars like the one on my hands. So the lesson on this is, either parents whether you've got older kids now or if you're a new parent, tell your kids what happened to them. They need this information. We crave this information. Too often, I mean, if there's one, you know, I mean, I have many regrets, right, with my parents not being around anymore. But my gosh, now knowing that they're not here, I have so many questions. I'm like, why didn't I ask them about this and this and this? And that information and that insight is gone forever. And at the time, I never thought about. So don't hold back information, good, bad, or indifferent. Share it. It's part of their lives. You don't get to, parents, you don't get to hold or keep that information. Whether it's good or bad, that's life and that's their life. So let them know whether it happened to them when they were two or it happened when they were 25. They need to know. So I had no idea that I had cut my lip as a baby, as a two-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old kid, and got stitches there. I thought I did it shaving. So I thought I was probably, you know, in my teens or in my 20s or whenever. But meanwhile, that scar has been there for most of my life. Ah, I did not know that. Not that it's a major life-shattering thing, but it's nice to know, right? Another one. I'm so glad I got this book. So I, you know, being an only child, I wasn't surrounded by a lot of kids at home, right? So a lot of times, I didn't have a lot of the childhood diseases, or at least I thought, because I wasn't catching them from my, you know, I was going to school, obviously, but I wasn't, you know, catching them from my siblings. I mean, so if I didn't catch it and I came home, I was fine. But don't forget, if you had three or four brothers at home, brothers or sisters at home, just because you didn't catch it at school doesn't mean that the other four or five of them didn't catch it from somebody. Now they bring it home and pass it around, and we're learning how diseases and infections spread these days, aren't we? And oh my gosh, you know, I've been refraining from talking about our current COVID situation, but I think next week I may have to, because I've got a major I told you so just hanging in the distance here. But anyway, so I do remember being told once again as a young kid, very young, a couple, 3 years old maybe, that I had the mumps. I was told that. I do remember that. But I don't remember being told about anything else. I was never told I had the measles, never told I had the chicken pox. I remember them talking about the mumps. So, and now in adult life, you know, people ask, you know, especially now, you know, shingles. You're seeing these commercials now for shingles, vaccinations, and shingles. Everybody's talking about shingles, shingles, shingles. Oh, the pain of shingles. And I've known people that have had shingles, quite a few. My dad had it, I remember, and he had a very painful case. I've got several friends that just through conversation, you find out that they had shingles, and they all talk about how painful it was. So, yeah, you don't want shingles. And now, apparently, there is a very effective vaccine that can help you, you know, not get those. Yeah, I mean, now this, I think the new vaccine, you get two doses of it, and it's supposedly going to, you know, is very effective. So, you know, hey, once again, you know, I'm not some conspiracy vaccine theorist or anti-vaxxer. You know, I see that medicine has helped us much more over the centuries than hurt us. You know, okay, and I don't think there's microchips in the COVID. And I see what vaccinations have done to for many decades eradicate diseases, and now sadly we have these people that are anti-vaxxers even before the pandemic, and we're seeing some of these diseases that we at one time pretty much eliminated coming back because people are not vaccinating. Wow, I didn't know how stupid of a society we really were until this. Anyway, so. I got my shingles shot, even though I felt, because the prevailing theory is that basically shingles is a return of the chickenpox virus, only now you're older and it has more implications, as does everything when you get older, as I'm learning. And so so that's why, you know, you don't want to get it. So even though in my mind I've never remember having the chicken pox as a kid, you know, in grammar school, you remember everybody was breaking out in chicken pox. I never did. So I just assumed, you know, I never had it because once again, I didn't remember it. And so, and no one ever really told me that I had it. So I got the shingles vaccination just for the heck of it, right? It can't hurt. There's no guarantees you won't get it. And I'm like, I don't need to get shingles. And I, in fact, have to get the new shot, the second dose of the shingles vaccine in a couple of months. But I'm looking through this book, once again, but this little baby book that my mom was filling out very diligently as I was, you know, living my life and every year passing. And once again, I learn about this scar on my lip from the baby book. She told me about the scar on my hand. I learned about my scar and my apparently stitches from this baby book. And then as I continue to read on, you know, it says childhood diseases. And I'm reading and it says mumps. And then it says chicken pox. Apparently when I was like 3 or 4, I got the chicken pox. I, once again, have no recollection of this at all. But I did have it. Always in my mind, talking to doctors, never had it. No, don't have chicken, but never had chicken pox. No, talking to people. No, never had chicken pox. Everybody's talking about their chicken pox stories. Remember, that was like the cool thing. Chicken pox was like the cool disease you can get when you were in grammar school. Because it was relatively non-threatening. It was a little irritating from what I understand. And you had those little spots and the scabs and you were kind of itchy. But that's bearable. But the great part was you got to miss school for a week. You know, they kept you out of school until it cleared and until you weren't contagious. And so, you know, all of a sudden, you know, where's Tommy or where's Lisa? They got the chicken pox. Oh, lucky them, you know. But I never had that luck, at least in my mind. I always had to keep going to school. I never got that nice little week off that other people did during grammar school. Or so I thought. I did have them. I just had them when I wasn't fully aware yet. So thankfully, I got the shingles vaccine and will get the next dose because I am now susceptible or potentially vulnerable because that at first I thought I don't have that virus in my body. So it can't, you know, turn on again in my later years. I was getting the shot as a pure, you know, there's that 1% chance. I don't care. I'll get a vaccine. I don't like needles when it comes to giving blood, but I don't really mind shots. So I'm like, hey, okay, I'll take it. Why not? Now I'm glad I did. Once again, parents, either you have adult children or you have young children or you have babies, tell them what has happened to them before they were aware of themselves. They need to know. They shouldn't have to discover scars and wonder what happened. They shouldn't have to read in a book, you know, 50 years later that they had a disease that they never knew they had. Share the information. It's great. Thank you, Mom. I'm glad you wrote it in the book, but I wish you would have told me too. A little verbal communication as well as written would have been nice. But anyway, so as I said, for the most part, I have been healthy aside from these little things, at least of when I was aware. And rarely get colds, rarely get sick. I mean, you know, I've never had any bad flus. This year was the first time I ever got a flu shot. Never had a flu shot before and never really got the flu. I've had colds, right? Everybody does, but nothing. I've never had the flu where it's like, oh my gosh, oh, I've been knocked out for a week and I don't get headaches and things like that. So I've been relatively, you know, lucky in that standpoint. Now, it was almost as if, you know, like a clock turned. When I turned 50, I've had a series of small little things that have happened. Thankfully, none of them overtly serious. None of them obviously, you know, dangerous or fatal. But I've had just a few, you know, several little episodes of things. that have happened. So much so that I now, for the last, 11 years, it's not 11 years, right? No, from the last 6 years. The last 6 years, I've created a document on my computer called, health. And so now I have been, things were starting to happen that I was like, I should just start documenting this because there's enough goofiness that's going on. As I said, nothing overtly serious. The things that, that come up that certainly were never coming up before. Enough so that I said, I should probably start documenting these. So now I have this ongoing health document that's on my desktop. And whenever I go to see any kind of a doctor, dentist, whatever, whether it's just for a checkup or if there's some kind of, I'm going in for a specific reason, I document it, the date and what happened. And if I have some kind of an incident that happened, the date and what happened. I really started to do this after back in 2015, I was in a play and I fell off a stage during a show. I fell off the stage and I seriously injured. Thankfully, didn't rip it, didn't need surgery, but I seriously injured my Achilles tendon. And that was a 3 month, ordeal with casts and boots and then physical therapy. It really was a 6 month thing. I hurt that in September and I had physical therapy through May. So that was 6-7 month odyssey of getting this Achilles tendon back, into shape. And to be honest with you, what's so funny is I probably should have done more follow up work. It's getting there, but the calf on my left leg where the Achilles tendon happened is noticeably smaller than the calf on my right leg. Now, my right leg has always been more muscular because I'm right-handed. I'm very right-handed dominant. I'm not ambidextrous in many ways at all. I'm right-handed and I am right-handed. And the right side of my body is the dominant side. And so I'm guessing when I was running or working out or walking or pedaling a bike, whatever, my right thigh, my right calf, the right side of my body is much more dominant, and the muscles are bigger. Everything's just bigger on the right side of my body. In fact, I've even noticed that my beard, when I shave, which is interesting, the right side of my face, the hair on the right side of my face and the sideburn, for instance, is thicker than the left side. I have to shave more and harder on the right side. So I'm very right side dominated. And as I said, so sometimes when I'm wearing shorts, my wife goes, wow, that, I don't even know whose leg that is because it looks so different. And I've had doctors go, when they felt both of my legs, they'll be like, whoa, why is this? And it's like, well, because it was basically atrophied. It was down to, when I had that in the cast, it was down to, when they took the cast off, I didn't recognize my leg. The muscle was so atrophied. I probably should do more work on it, but it is appreciably smaller than my right now. So it's kind of funny. But that's when I started to do this this little health timeline, and it's actually come in health handy. Because when I'm with dates or when I'm talking to a doctor and I'm saying, I had this thing, I don't remember when it was. Well, now I just go right into this document and look, and there's the date. That's when it happened. When it happens, we think we'll never forget, but years go by and we do forget. Well, now I've got this. In fact, I saw a new doctor recently, and which will be a part of the story I'm going to tell you. Yes, I promise I will get to it. But it all sets the stage. So just so you know. And so I printed this document up. It's all here. If you want to know what's happened to me in the last 5 years, here it is. And he was like, wow, this is great. Thank you. This is really helpful. So I'm obviously, as you can tell, if you listen to me with any regularity, you know I'm very detail-oriented. I like to ask questions. If I get into something, I'm into it. I'm involved in it. So now suddenly my health is one of those things because I've had a few little episodes and different things. As I said, nothing life-threatening, but things that need to be taken care of as time goes on. The old body does begin to wear down, and you get pains and things happen that you never had before, and you just used to take your health for granted, and when you hit a certain age, you can't do that anymore. And so I'm making that transition, and I'm being more aware of my body and the signals it's sending. And I'm, as I said before, being more honest and upfront and not in denial. If I feel something, I get it checked now. I don't pretend that it will go away. But you know, this, that's good and bad, right? Because if you're over, if you're overly involved, then any kind of situation you have a tendency to blow it up and make it more stressful. I mean, I am a stressor in that I am always thinking five steps ahead, and I'm always thinking of the worst case scenario, so I'm prepared for it. That it can be helpful in many ways to solve problems, but it also can be detrimental because I'm always kind of there's always like a little anxiety there, which is probably why I have high blood pressure or hypertension because of that. I'm sure of that. Now, like I said, it can be an asset in some ways, but then it also can be a detriment. Well, let me tell you how it was a detriment. So, as I said, I had this test done, and I won't go into the specifics. I don't need to do that, but just to say, it was a test that needed to be done to just make sure that everything was fine. Had a small episode on something. Once again, nothing major, but enough that we need to test it to make sure it was isolated as opposed to something bigger, right? Great, no problem. Happy about that. I love prevention. I am a prevention guy. I believe in taking care of things at the beginning rather than waiting until they get out of control, and then trying to fix it is 10 times harder and maybe impossible. I'm the guy that would rather fill the small little hole on the street when it happens rather than letting it go until it becomes a giant pothole that breaks my axle as I drive over it. I will take care of it. When I see something small, I take care of it when it happens. And it makes life a lot simpler. I've said many times before, I don't like drama. Drama in your life comes when you don't pay attention. And something happens that maybe could have been averted if you had paid attention earlier and taken care of it. So I always try to, I try to be observant on a lot of things. And when something happens, I try not to procrastinate, because I find that when you face it and you solve it, it's done. As I said before many times, I love making lists, and there's nothing better. The only thing I love more about making a list is scratching out the things on my list. Oh, the fulfillment and satisfaction of that is unbelievable. So I take this test, and most tests take a couple of days to get the results from. And with my doctor and the hospital I'm affiliated with, they have this little informational portal that you can go on and you can communicate with your doctor. If you have any questions, it tells you about, your visits, your appointments, your test results. They send you your test results to the portal, which is great. Boom, it just pops up. And you can also communicate. I would hope that most hospitals and doctors have this this capability now. My old doctor did not, so that's why I'm really excited about this. And I have used it probably much to his chagrin, because I'm always asking questions, and he's been very patient. No pun intended. I'm the patient, but he's been patient and very responsive, and I've really enjoyed that. Sadly, I had another doctor who left town. I had him for about 10 years. I just got this doctor a few months ago, and now he's retiring. I chose him because he seemed to be, he was an older guy, and he seemed very experienced based on the qualifications that was on his bio. And I'm like, okay, this sounds like a guy that I could, and so he was so experienced and a little older that he's ready to retire. I wish he would have told me that 6 months ago. But I really liked him. I do like him, and I liked being with him, and I felt comfortable with him, and he was very responsive, and so I'm sad to see him go. So hopefully my next doctor now will be in the same vein, no pun intended, because I have enjoyed this, and as I do have a lot of questions when something comes up, and he has been very responsive and very informative and detailed with me, and so I appreciate that. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but ironically, that means I think my other doctor was last July, and then I got this doctor in October, and now I will be needing a new doctor in June. So almost in a year, it'll almost be July, I will have had three doctors now in 1 year. Jeez. But anyway, I take the test, and of course now here I am wondering. And they said it's going to take a while. There's a lot of data involved. Okay, no problem. I sent him an email. Here's me. As soon as the test was done, I sent him an email. Doctor, I'm sure when he says, when I put Dr. Blank, Jim Toronto checking in on this email that I could send him, I'm sure he just rolls his eyes and goes, oh, geez, here we go again. But if he is doing that, he's not relaying that to me. He's being very responsive. But I said, so I just took the test today. I put the date down and the time, Mr. Detail. And I just wondering, will you get the results? Will I get them on my portal, or I have an appointment with you coming up in a week or so. Will you just wait? And we'll discuss it then. Just want to know what next steps are. Now, I don't think that's crazy to ask. I mean, you've taken a test. It's about your health. You're interested. You're concerned. You want to know everything's okay. So hopefully I'm within my bounds as a concerned and, I guess, proactive patient. I guess maybe that was the way you would describe me. Maybe a little much of a nag, but I would think if you're a doctor, I'd much rather have a nag than someone that doesn't care, right? So at least if I'm going to go overboard, I'm going to once again go overboard on the side of caution and information. I believe in information and caution, right? I'm not a gambler. That's why, I mean, it's clear why I don't dig Vegas that much. I like Las Vegas, the city, but I never gamble there because it really goes against everything that's in my makeup. I just said, I like information and I like caution. Well, that's not what you do at a blackjack table or a craps table, right? There's no information and you're risking everything. So that's why, to me, I could walk right through and I have done for most of my adult life. I've been to Vegas many, many times. I can walk through the middle of a casino with the bells and the lights and the neon and everything going on, the screaming, the yelling, the laughter, whatever is it, and I will walk straight through without even batting an eye. Won't even stop to look, to watch a game. Just not interested. But that's me. So he says, no, I will get the results, and then I will, as soon as I get them, I will contact you. Okay, fine. So I'm not expecting them to come anytime in the next day or so. So I just go about my business. And once again, I took this test, and I wasn't fearing it at all. I wasn't fearing the results because I felt that whatever had happened was a isolated incident. And so I wasn't really afraid. This was more of a precautionary test just to make sure that everything's fine as we move forward. So I was just more interested in the results because I took a test, right? I took a medical health test, and now I want to know my results. When you were in school, you took a test, and after you took the test, you wanted to know what grade you got, right? You couldn't wait. You're like, hey, teacher, when are you going to grade these tests? Come on, we took it on Wednesday, and it's Thursday morning. What are you doing? Oh, I'll have them for you on Friday. So, you know, once again, though, that's me. I'm Jerry, very, you know, results oriented and a type A and always thinking and worrying probably too much, right? Which I will prove to you. So, I go about my business. I'm almost forgotten about the test results. Whenever they come, I guess. Because once again, I was not sweating this test. So I come home. I ran some errands one day, a couple of days, right, maybe actually even the next day after I had sent that email saying, what's the next steps? When he said, yes, I'll get them and I'll let you know. I'm assuming it's going to be, you know, several days at the earliest. So it was kind of put out of my mind. As I said, I wasn't overly worried that anything was wrong. Wasn't feeling bad, so I felt okay. So I go out and I do a few errands. Went to the grocery store, came home, and I noticed the phone has a message on it. And so I hit the message, and it says, "Hello, this is Doctor." I'll just say Dr. Smith. Oh, dear, the pain. Will Robinson, you cantankerous tin can, you? Oh, dear. I love doing my Dr. Smith. But his name isn't Dr. Smith. But so it's Dr. Smith. Hi, this is Dr. Smith. I just wanted to let you know. I got your test results. Thank you for taking the test, which I thought was, I mean, that's the kind of guy he is, a nice guy. You know, thank you for taking the test. Why would you have to thank me? You know, most doctors order the test. I want you to take this test. You know, so you do it, right? You listen to your doctor. So I thought it was kind of a cool thing that he thanked me for taking the test. So I was already, just from hearing that line, I'm like, what a nice guy. You know, he didn't need to say that. Thanks. So at least I know I'm not bugging him either. He goes, thank you for taking the test. Now, here's the interesting part. I'm listening to the voicemail, and I hear him say, I've got the results of your test, and there's something dangerous, and so I will send you an email and let you know the results. There's something dangerous? I mean, could you imagine getting that? And now it was like 5:30. So, I mean, I hear something dangerous. Wow. I mean, to use the word dangerous when you are giving someone a message about their health, the word dangerous is enough, right? And I think that's all I heard was dangerous. So immediately I run to the computer because I'm looking to see what he sent me, and I hadn't got the email yet, and so now I go upstairs and I tell my wife and I said, you know, I got a message from the doctor and he's talking about my test results and he said there's something dangerous. Well, I mean, she turns as white as a ghost. I mean, that word dangerous is scary, right? So I rush downstairs and I go get the information to call him and call him back. And it's, you know, it's 5:30 and he's not in the office. I leave a message with his answering service. And they said, well, you know, is this an emergency? I said, well, no, it's not life threatening. It's not an emergency. I do need to talk to him. He did call me and left me a message. I want to talk to him. She said, okay, I'll send the message. I said, well, do you think he's going to call me back today? Because I mean, in my mind, this is an emergency, but, it sounds like even though he said something's dangerous, he doesn't seem all that, like he didn't say run to the hospital. But still, now my mind is going crazy. As I said, I'm Mr. Worry, and I'm adding, you know, pressure and anxiety and stress to this conversation because I hear this word dangerous. So, you know, I talk to the woman. She says, okay, I'll pass it on. I'm like, fine. But now I don't have any information. I do check my portal, and I get the information there. But all it is here are your test results. And he said, you know, here's, and he gives me this kind of rundown of what they mean. But, you know, he's not really telling me in layman's terms. He's using using doctor terms to explain this and giving me these statistics and stuff, which I'm not understanding the context of them. And I don't understand I don't know what 0.3 is. Is 0.3 good or bad? Now, he knows, but I don't know. So I'm still, all I have are these numbers. that really don't mean anything to me. And I have his voicemail that says there's something dangerous. And then on this, it says, you know, abnormal test. And it says something about rare. And it says something about burden, you know, on these test results. So burden, not a positive word, right? Abnormal is not a good word. Rare, as in a rare disease, not a good word, right? So I'm seeing these numbers, but I'm reading words that I at least know the definition of, or at least I'm defining in my now view of this, that this is serious, that because he told me that it's dangerous. So I'm looking at this test and everything in these test results and all the feedback. I'm looking at this as this is bad. I'm seeing rare, as in when I see the word rare, I'm thinking rare as in a rare disease or rare something rare that's not normal. I'm seeing the word abnormal, which is not normal. That you can't make any abnormal is abnormal. And in my mind, this is bad. And I'm seeing burden. The word burden, that's not a good word. So I that's all I have to go on. I have this message that says something dangerous, at least I thought. I've got this report, which I can't really understand, but there's enough serious and negative words in it that just reinforce the word dangerous. And now I can't talk to him and probably won't hear to him for tomorrow. So my wife comes down and she goes, well, let me listen to this message. What did he say? Because she sees how shaken up. I'm totally shaken up now. So she hits the button and she says, well, did he say nothing dangerous or something? And I'm like, and I heard something. She's like, well, let's listen again. So she hits it again. And, you know, now I've sort of, she goes, it's close, you know, because his voice kind of went down. She goes, did he say nothing? I said, he didn't say nothing. You could hear it. It's something. I mean, because I'm in gloom and doom mode now, right? I'm in panic mode. I got burden and dangerous and abnormal and rare and something's dangerous. And I have no more information and nothing to change that because I can't get in touch with him to hear him say this. So I am just, you know, needless to say, that night I did not sleep very much. And I was trying to be calm, but I was just completely, you know, out of my mind going, what is dangerous? Now, obviously, I was trying to take some steps back. Oh, well, you know, he said dangerous, but yet he didn't tell me, oh, my gosh, come see me tomorrow, get to the hospital. So maybe it was just a bad choice of words. And maybe there's something that needs to be talked about here and confronted. But I mean, it's not life. I'm not going to die tonight. Not dying overnight, that was my great consolation in my mind. That's where my head had gone. Immediately, I went right to the worst, right? Sadly, I sort of have that. That's my knee-jerk reaction. I go to the worst. So it was a tough night, and you know, my wife was trying not to talk too much about it, not to get me upset because I was already upset, but I'm just wondering what the hell's going on. So I sent him an email in response, even though he wasn't going to, you know, he usually doesn't respond to the next day, just saying, I got my results and I'd like to talk to you as soon as I can just to better understand the results and my condition. Because the last I heard from him verbally was something dangerous. And then I get all these test results, which are written in medical gobbledygook, but I see words that can't be good, like abnormal and rare and and burden. So he calls me the next afternoon, like at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So now the next, that whole night and now the next day, I'm still wondering what's going on. Oh, and so he comes. I said, oh, doctor, thank you so much for calling. I said, he goes, well, what can I, and his voice is not, you know, his voice is not like concerned or, so he goes, so what can I do for you? You know, very cheery. Hi, Jim, what can I do for you? And I'm like, you know, I'm like dying over here. I thought literally. And I'm like, Well, I just wanted to discuss the tests. I said, you know, I got the results, and I'm really not sure how to read them, but I see it says, you know, an abnormal thing, and I'm seeing, and he goes, and I said, you know, and you mentioned that it, that there was something dangerous. And he goes, no, I didn't say something dangerous. I said, nothing dangerous. No, first he said, no, I didn't say dangerous. I would never say that. I would never leave that. And I said, well, I still have the message. I said, you know, you said dangerous. And he goes, well, I can't believe I would have said there was something. I would never have left that as a message to anybody. So I played it for him. And as I hit the button and I put the phone next to the answering machine that's playing it, as clear as day, he said, nothing dangerous. I see nothing dangerous. It was as clear as day. But when I heard that word dangerous, I blocked everything out. I went to, this is bad, this is horrible. So he literally did say, it's nothing dangerous. When I asked him about the test results, he said, well, yeah, he said, well, that, I said, well, there's the word burden. What does that mean? He said, well, that's just a term they use, but yours was so low. It's, they have to acknowledge it, but you're on the very, very, the lowest level of that. I said, what about abnormal? He said, well, you know, there was a little thing here. So once there's one thing wrong or one little deviation, they consider it an abnormal test. But your situation is so on the lowest level that I don't even be concerned about it. You know, in medical terms, it's abnormal because it's not completely, but whatever happened here is nothing. And then I said, well, what about this rare? It says I have some rare symptom. He goes, no, that means it occurred rarely. So it's almost, as I said before, hardly even apparent. He says, no, trust me, this is good news. Well, I let out a sigh that you would never believe, because I mean, for the last 24 hours, I was in a serious anxiety, stress mode that I had some serious dangerous ailment. And I went to some crazy lengths in my mind and made this worse. And it's amazing what your body can do and what your anxiety and emotions can do to you. I mean, I had gone to some dark places in those 24 hours because I heard this word dangerous. The only thing I could say is, from the doctor's standpoint, yes, when I heard it again and I listened to it with a clear head, I heard nothing. It was as clear as day. My wife and I were laughing. I said, my gosh, how could you not hear nothing? But we both didn't, because I think we were just zoned in on there's something dangerous. So my thing is, if you're a doctor listening to this, if you're a medical student, don't use the word dangerous as something positive. Don't use nothing and dangerous together. That's not a good thing. Don't use the word dangerous. If he would have left a message that would have said, hi, Jim, got your results. Everything looks good. There's a couple things we need to talk about, but good news. I'll talk to you and I'll see you, you know, next Friday, whatever it is. That's all he had to say. Same communication, same output from his mind. He said, no, this is good news. This test is good news. Don't worry about this. When I talked to him, but the message he left, put the word dangerous. When you have test results, don't use the word dangerous. Whether you're qualifying it with nothing dangerous, don't put the word dangerous anywhere near that message. All he had to say, and even in the email, he could have said, test looks good. We'll talk about in detail when I see you next. That's all he had to say. Good. That's if the test results are good, use that. Give me the good word. Don't give me the bad one. Or don't let me guess. I can't read these. I see burden and abnormal and rare, and I'm going right to the bad stuff. Because I heard you say dangerous before. Yes, you qualified it with nothing, but I didn't hear that. Your voice kind of went down, and when I heard dangerous, I didn't hear anything else. So here's a tip to you youngsters out there. you young doctors or any doctor out there, when you're leaving a message for a patient about their results, don't use the word dangerous if it's not. If everything looks good, say looks good. I'm happy with these results. Because that's what he was. I mean, don't lie. If it's something serious, then you have to say that. But if it isn't, don't cloud the issue by using the word dangerous to describe something that's positive. Nothing dangerous. Yes, that's a good thing. But that word dangerous is still a bad, scary word when you're in this kind of mode. And it just reminded me, you know, there's an old phrase that says, you know, sometimes art, you know, sort of repeats itself in reality. But this reminded me of reality imitating art. Usually you say, you know, art imitates reality, right? Because we write about something and we create something based on something that really happened. But in this case, reality imitated art. And I say that for all you Honeymooners fans out there. If you're a fan of the Honeymooners show with Jackie Gleason and Art Carney and Audrey Meadows and Joyce Randolph, there's a great episode called A Matter of Life and Death. And I love the Honeymooners. I've been watching it since I can't even remember. I know them all by heart. And as soon as the doctor, I hung up the phone with the doctor and told my wife, I said, boy, this is right out of the Honeymooners. There's a great episode called A Matter of Life and Death, where Ralph's wife takes her mother's dog to the vet because the dog is sick. And she doesn't want Ralph to know that she took the dog. So she's going to have the doctor's diagnosis and report sent to her home, but just make sure that, you know, it's to her, not to Ralph. But it's going to be sent to Alice. Now, at the same time, Ralph went to his doctor for a checkup. Just a normal checkup. He said he wasn't feeling too well. He just felt a little out of it, and he wanted to get a checkup. So she took the dog to the vet at the same time that he went to the doctor. And the doctor's report is going to be delivered to Ralph's house. Now, Ralph doesn't know that Alice took the dog. He has no idea that there's a vet report on the way to the house. So a delivery man comes. Says, I have this for Alice Cramden. Ralph goes, I'm Mr. Cramden. He takes the thing and he assumes it's the report from his doctor about his checkup. And so it says, Dear Mrs. Cramden, I'm afraid the news isn't good. There's a case of arterial monochromia. I've inserted some pills. Please give, you know, administer a pill a night. With warm milk, and you may see some symptoms. They might lose some hair, might have a blue tongue, might have the chills. You know, be loving, be caring, and hopefully, but most likely, they probably have has 6 months to live. Now, when they phrased this letter for comic purposes, they didn't use the word dog. They didn't use the dog's name. They just used this basic thing. So Ralph reads this letter and he thinks that he has 6 months to live. And there's a whole thing that goes on. But then later on, he shows Alice the letter and she starts laughing because she knows it's from the vet. Because Ralph says, I'm going to die in 6 months. And she says, so she starts reading the letter and she starts laughing. He goes, well, aren't you the merry widow? She goes, oh, Ralph, oh, blue tongue, bald head, saucer of warm milk. This is hilarious. And he goes, this is hilarious. This is a riot. You're going to probably be, you're probably going to be laughing at my funeral. And she goes, oh, this isn't about you. This is about my dog, my mom's dog, Ginger. Arterial monochromia, as described in this letter, is a disease for scratching for fleas. So then, of course, there's a bunch of stuff. I won't ruin it. It's a great episode. It's called A Matter of Life and Death. You can probably look it up on the internet. But that was exactly what happened. I totally misunderstood this message. I went right to the worst. I created this whole scenario in my head that I was seriously ill and what do I do? And oh my God. And even Ralph says, you don't know what it's like. To think, this lasted maybe a day or so that he was wondering, you know, what it's like to think you're going to die in 6 months. And I was going through the same kind of thoughts because I heard this word dangerous in that message. And then when I was told, when I listened to it again, as soon as I heard it, when I played it for the doctor, I heard nothing as clear as day. And I couldn't believe that I made that mistake, so I felt like a fool. And then he's telling me, no, this is good news. Believe me, this is, I'm happy with these results. You should be happy. But wow, for those 24 hours, I was Ralph Cramden. I thought I had arterial monochromia, and I thought I had 6 months to live. So at this point, instead of art imitating life, this time life imitated art. So all I can say is, if you're a doctor, don't use the word dangerous when you're talking about test results that are good news. And if you are reading something or getting a message from your doctor, make sure you listen close. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGN Radio, or we are found wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. And don't forget, you can help the cause by sending a message, sending a link, telling your friends, telling your family that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck isn't it theirs? Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 254. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. I do not have arterial monochromia.